The Lucas County Causa Podcast is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Lucas County Causa Program, with generous support from an Ohio Attorney General's Office grant award. More information at causakids.net.
Welcome to The Power of One, the Lucas County Causa Podcast, where we explore how just one caring adult can make a life-changing difference for a child in the welfare system. I'm your host, Andrea de la Roca. We know that children in foster care often face unique health challenges, from physical health needs to mental health support, and even access to basic care. CASA volunteers are no doctors, but we are powerful advocates who help ensure that children get the resources, attention, and support they need for a healthier future. Today, we're talking about the role of CASA volunteers in a child's health journey. I'm joined by two amazing CASA volunteers, Linda Grimm and Amy Bucky. Both Amy and Linda began their CASA journey in January 2021, and since then, they have been walking alongside children in foster care as strong, steady advocates. Linda and Amy have a unique story about what brought them to CASA and how their experiences have shaped the way they serve children. Linda and Amy, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
So let's start with your CASA beginnings. So to both of you, Linda and Amy, you both became CASA volunteers in January 2021. Can you take us back to that moment and what inspired you to take the leap into this work?
Well, I had just retired, and Amy and I are neighbors and friends, and we were walking in the neighborhood, and we were talking about kind of our vision for retirement. Amy was also retired, and CASA was brought up, and I said, I have always considered that, and Amy shared that. And with that, Amy took the ball. Immediately the next day had herself signed up, and then I signed up and our journey started.
Yes. For me, about 12 years ago, my daughter's sorority's philanthropy was CASA. And I attended one of the sorority's fundraisers and heard a very dynamic speaker talk about the CASA organization and its mission to advocate for children. And it cemented in my mind that I would love to do that, but I felt like I didn't have the time to do it until I retired. So it was perfect timing for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so everyone's CASA journey looks a little different. Could you each share your first impression of training and what stood out to you most as you prepare to step into the role?
Mm-hmm. Well, we began our training in January 21, and we were still on semi-lockdown in Lucas County. So CASA provided us with Zoom meetings every Thursday night for our training. Okay. And they went through the theory, the curriculum, had a couple guest speakers. We had exercises that we did at home, and we were with our class, but all on Zoom. And we did the entire training that way.
Oh, wow.
And although it may seem a little impersonal, you know, we did get to know each other somewhat. But as we later found out, maybe it wasn't the experience it is today. When you meet and become a cohesive group and have more of a back and forth dialogue. But it was very sufficient, and they gave us really good resources. And we had their number at CASA on speed dial. And they always answered. Yeah. And they were there. And what I learned from that training especially was that each case is unique and requires specific needs, and I may not know everything about it, but they have the resources to connect me, and then I also had my partner, Amy, We kind of clicked in that we were good at dialoguing, problem solving, critical thinking, and calling CASA for answers. So it was a good training.
Okay. Well said. Yeah. Different for me, different than Linda, I was not used to going to ongoing continuing education and in my profession. So initially, I kind of doubted even my ability to make it through the course itself. So I just wanted to say this for anyone that's listening and is interested in being a volunteer, that the curriculum is both comprehensive and challenging at times. And it challenged my perspective on things. For example, we speak about minimum standard requirements in a home setting. And that was something that it challenged me, and I needed to rethink how I look at things. So I did find that being immersed in that curriculum was a excellent learning curve for me.
Okay, great. And we, Chris and I, talked about that in the last episode. So thank you for bringing that up. So every volunteer has a turning point. What was that first case experience like for you ladies, and how did it shape the way you approach your work as a CASA?
It is so memorable. It is so memorable. Well, CASA is really good about handpicking your first case and giving you kind of the demographic you think you're most comfortable with. And we said we would prefer to start with an infant. I was extremely confident with infants based on the work I've done. And what was supposed to be a very typical case, child was in placement with her maternal grandmother, and her mother was in services, and all was going swimmingly. And then it all went upside down, and it included so many facets that I had no experience with. But again, hotline to CASA, and even one-on-one, two-on-one sessions downtown in their office, we figured it all out. And what it did was, it was a turning point in that Amy and I both said, they'll have to fire us because we're in this to win it. We are going to make sure that this little girl has a safe, loving home, whether that be with her mom, preferably, or in an adoptive situation. But we are going to see this through. And it really provided like our commitment to children of Lucas County.
Very much so. Yeah. Because of this, we were exposed to many firsts. Okay. Changing families from a temporary custody with grandma to a foster care situation to a situation where the foster mom actually wanted to terminate as a foster parent. Because of some mental health issues, okay, to an emergency placement, which ultimately became the permanent home for the mm-hmm. child. So we were in this case for over 4 years, for over 3 years from okay. start to finish.
Okay.
And it ended beautifully mm-hmm. in a full adoption, and our wonderful little girl finding a forever home.
Oh.
So it was a very successful story with many ups and downs. And we've said before, we feel like we ran the whole gamut on this particular case. So it was quite a learning experience.
Okay. Earlier, Linda, you mentioned about your background. Can you mm-hmm. ladies share what your background is?
Sure. Yeah. My background is I was a neonatal nurse for many, many years. And in that, and in my nursing education, I learned about child development, immunizations, what is typical, for a child through their pediatrician office and, and just various children's problems and issues. And I think it has helped me, first, decipher medical records for children, and second, to really advocate that physical health is extremely important to a child's development and growth, and can also affect their mental health. And I'm a very strong proponent of good medical care for children, for all children.
Thank you, Linda. Mm-hmm. My background is in education and counseling.
Okay.
I worked various jobs in the counseling area, but my last probably 20 years was working within school districts. Okay. So I felt like I had the ability to navigate the school system, working with all of the components that make up the care for the child, not just the teacher, but the administrators, the special needs programs, the counseling programs, and anything else in the district that we can pull on to advocate for the children.
So your skills are perfect for CASA. Yeah, so, and that's what we want, you know, the audience to know, that even if you were a banker, you know, your skills, I'm pretty sure, can be used to the service of a child in need here in Lucas County. So, okay, so you're both have been serving since 2021. Looking back, what do you think has been the most rewarding part of being a CASA volunteer?
The most rewarding part of being a CASA volunteer certainly was our first case that ended up in an adoption, because it was the right adoption for the right reasons, and we had exhausted every avenue to keep the family intact and the mother engaged. We did feel good about the adoption. And then also briefly, there was another case where a father just needed a hand up. He was unexpectedly became a father very quickly, and he wasn't set up to be a father at that moment, but he rose to the challenge. He completed all of his services, was just a delight to work with, and his son and him are being a very successful team navigating life together, and that was extremely gratifying.
I agree with both of those cases, very much so. I think another thing I wanted to mention was, as far as being the most rewarding part, or one of the rewarding parts of being a CASA, the CASA community is extensive, and we have never really been disappointed when we have come into CASA with questions, with concerns. We feel heard, we feel listened to, and we, I don't think to date, have felt like we've been left out on a ledge to do this by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the greatest support, especially when we're talking to future volunteers, to know that you are backed, you're supported, you're heard, and we're all here for the benefit and the advocacy of children.
Yeah, and when someone becomes a volunteer, you know, they first, they will have a mentor, they have three CASA coaches, they have a CASA staff attorney, and of course the community, you know, people like you ladies who, you know, we come together often for trainings, for social hour, you know, just so we can maintain the community. And we know that you guys need support, because this isn't easy. So, okay, thank you. Earlier, you know, I mentioned that you have a unique volunteer story. So can you please share your co-CASA story with our audience?
Well, we didn't know if it was possible to be co-CASAs, but in that initial conversation, we know each other so well that we thought if they haven't tried co-CASAs, we would be a good starting point, because we're both so honest and candid with one another. And listened to one another, and we both had the same goal. We wanted to be the voice for a child who currently their voice is being lost. And so with that single focus, we were pretty sure we couldn't make too many mistakes. And that we, of course, always had our CASA family to lean on.
Yeah. And yes, I feel exactly the same way. And it may have been a good example of when you're going into something from the beginning, be as candid as you can. Mm-hmm. We had sort of decided that if that didn't work for this organization, that that may not work for us. But again, the openness of CASA to do something that they have rarely done mm-hmm. with their volunteers made us feel very welcomed.
Okay. Amy and I decided very, very early on that we would take on the challenge of committing to 2 years, which they asked us to do after mm-hmm. training us and whatnot. And we would be committed to do our very best for 2 years, and then we would reevaluate on our second anniversary. And we mm-hmm. sat down and had a really frank conversation. I think it ended up Amy saying, okay, let's just do this, 3, 2, 1, and we both speak, and we both said yes.
Oh, okay.
I think we were so committed at that point yes. that we probably knew each other's answers.
Yeah. But oh, that validated, yes. you know, our initial gut feeling that we can do this. And although not always perfectly, we always put our full heart into every case. Mm-hmm. And we have learned and grown a great deal also.
Absolutely. And I would say to any volunteer that starts doubting themselves in the process, there are tremendous resources within CASA to talk you through it. Not necessarily to talk you into it, but to talk you through what your issues might be
yeah.
and see if they can be resolved or softened.
Yes. And the 2-year commitment is really for the benefit of the child.
Exactly.
Yeah, because we want our CASA volunteers to be the one person that stays with this child from the beginning to the end of the case, because we are the only ones who are actually there for the full term
duration.
Of the case. Yeah.
I'm Felicia, and I'm a CASA volunteer. So I am an advocate for children. I represent children who are in unfortunate situations and are abused, neglected, and have to be in the court system. So they are either under the supervision of the court system or possibly removed from their families temporarily. Each case is different. So I am independent. I do not work for the local Children Protective Service. I am just a volunteer, and my job is solely to advocate for the best interests of the child, whether that is to stay and reunify with their parents, which is always the best course because that's what children want. We want to keep families intact, or possibly be with a family member. But what I do is look at all the players in the case, family members, anyone involved in the child's life, and of course interview the child, get to know them, and investigate the various parts of the case, and then I make a recommendation to the court. It's always great to see something exceptional come out with a positive outcome, whether it's I had a mom overcome a drug addiction and get custody back of her daughter, which was wonderful. And more recently, we had successfully a child who couldn't reunify with his parents, but had a very loving family member. So we finally found some permanency and stability for this child. So I was overjoyed for that. And so building strong families, I feel saving these children from further trauma and getting them with someone stable. Now, If that means they have to leave their home, we of course still want them to know their parents, visit their parents if it's safe for them to do so, because they will want that as they grow older and even as adults. But keeping children from harm and getting them in good situations, it benefits our communities and society as a whole, just to keep everybody healthy and happy and safe. I would just highly recommend becoming a volunteer. I'm a mother, a grandmother, a professional, and I feel like being a volunteer just really adds to my life in all aspects. And it not only helps the children, but it helps me, helps the community. So just, I'd recommend volunteering or looking into it if anyone has any interest.
To start, let's lay the groundwork. CASA volunteers are appointed by a judge to advocate for a child's best interest in court. How does this translate into supporting a child's health journey?
This is Linda, and I'm not 100% sure this answers the question exactly, but we feel so strongly about supporting the health journey that we go in person to the medical facility, clinic, and or pediatrician with our journal entry from the court in hand so that we can do a face-to-face introduction, give them our paperwork, and ask them for the current records, at least 1 year back. And we do that so we have a really strong baseline of where that child's been and where that child needs to go in their health journey and see if there's any deficits that we need to advocate that are met by their caregiver, guardian, foster immediately. Mm-hmm. Because the wheels grind slow and you need to make appointments and and work out transportation and all of it. So that's how we set it up. And then from then on, it's usually just a phone call or an email and we can access information.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've experienced kind of lessons learned in our first case. We ended up emailing attached journal of entries in order to get information and got no responses. Mm-hmm. And it just lagged behind for a month at a time. And it wasn't satisfying to anyone at that point. So we learned the lesson of going in person. We get a much better response. We put in the personal touch. And in the long run, we get what we need in a more, it just happens quicker and we can work on the case sooner.
When you think about a child's health journey, what comes to mind and how do CASA volunteers fit into that?
Well, when I think about a child's health journey, from my perspective, being a nurse, I think it's critical. Mm-hmm. And by accessing those records, you might find something that you don't hear or see or are told. And that can be in the narrative from the physician, the nurse, the social worker, and you will discover that there may have been medical neglect, physical neglect, abuse. You may also discover that this caregiver has argued and not been compliant on medical treatment. And this is all part of the health journey that child has experienced. And you want that neglect to end. And if it takes training to the guardian or bringing it to their attention that what they have done has not benefited the child, then you're starting at a good baseline. And that child, at least I can feel like I've done all I can to make sure that child gets good health care from this moment forward. And there is so much you can glean from those records. Mm-hmm. And yes. You don't have to be a nurse to read the records and understand that, because social workers especially put it in very, very plain language. And they also write when they've made referrals to Lucas County Children's Services also, and there can be records there. So health journey is critical to me, and it benefits the child if you dive in a bit.
Thank you, Linda. That's very well said. Getting reports to us is mm-hmm. critical mm-hmm. because it takes the subjectivity out of the formula. Mm-hmm. So basically, different caregivers can also often be subjective and often defensive mm-hmm. because they're trying to back up what they've done or maybe neglected to do. Mm-hmm. So we are just there to get the facts so mm-hmm. we can best support the child, and it is that simple.
Okay, what kinds of health-related issues have you most encountered in the cases you worked on? Mm.
Well, some have been so difficult to read that I have to even soften them because I have, unfortunately, seen up close and firsthand mm-hmm. some really horrific things that have happened to children. Okay. And when I read about them, now, it's upsetting. There mm-hmm. have been, of course, physical neglect, abuse, and one of the more disturbing things for me was medications that were imperative to a child's health. Mm-hmm. The parents quit giving, and the child was experiencing severe health issues for which they took the child to ER, but never disclosed why the child was having them and continued with that false story until, fortunately, a physician ordered a lab that told the story that the medication was not being given, and therefore this is why the child was gravely ill. So I guess my point is it runs the gambit, yes. and it is upsetting, but you kind of have to say, but it can stop here,
yeah.
and it will stop because of us,
yeah.
and we will hopefully provide the push, let's do better by this child.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. What always strikes me on top of numerous neglects is the follow-through neglect. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. things may be identified often in the case, but again, as Linda said, and then because of all sorts of reasons, the caregiver can be extremely busy, has multitasking behaviors going on in their life, but the neglect of following through on appointments, mm-hmm. on suggestions, on medications. So hopefully we can move that along to an avenue, make it a little more palatable for them to be able to work in the system to get things done with suggestions. Mm-hmm. Well, I am a true believer, and Linda and I discuss this often, that when you are in an environment that is safe and protected for the child, that you can thrive as far as health and mental health issues are concerned. If you are not in an environment that feels protected, safe, and where you have the opportunity to grow and learn and express yourself, then you are constantly guarded and feel that you cannot be your best self. Mm-hmm. So what we come into when we go into a case is generally an environment that has been tarnished mm-hmm. by abuse, some type of abuse. Could be emotional abuse, physical abuse, and those are things that greatly affect the mental health and health, general physical health of any child that's exposed to that.
Okay, thank you. From your experience, can one of you or both of you share a story where you made a real difference in addressing a child's health needs?
Because we had accessed the notes from the pediatrician and read through them, we found out some very critical information. This particular child was labeled failure to thrive, which means this child was not keeping up on the growth curve from infancy on. And the child was receiving care from a grandmother who insisted she was feeding the child enough. And at each weight check, which she did take the child for, the child was not making any gains. And when we read through the notes, we discovered that the doctor was trying to educate the mother on what she was feeding the child and the amounts, and she was imposing her own opinions on what infants should eat based mm-hmm. on how she raised her own child. And she had a special concoction of infant milk that she made, and the child was not getting the vitamins and nutrients and fats, importantly fats, to provide steady growth. Now, being underweight is not just being underweight. You're undernourishing the brain, the bones, and everything. That will impact a child's intelligence. So that first couple years is critical, and that's why so much is put on with that weight curve. You know, pediatricians want to see the weight at or around 50%, but what they really want to see is a steady growth. And when growth is going backwards, something's not right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is physical. Oftentimes it's the caregiver is either diluting formula or giving maybe skim milk or milk that isn't fortified. Or in this case, she had her own ideas based on her own culture and based on how she fed her children. And once we found that out, it was in the nick of time because it was prior to a hearing. And when we brought that to the forefront and provided the evidence from the doctor's notes, it really changed the case.
It changed the entire case.
It changed the entire case.
Okay. Yes.
It did result in a removal. That child started gaining weight and started being more developmentally appropriate.
Okay.
And growing and laughing and smiling and according to Help Me Grow program was behind but getting on target after several months. Okay. And I think in the nick of time we started that intervention. Really, really benefited the child.
What was the outcome, the final outcome of the case?
The case did result in termination because the mother just was unable, and we gave her a very extended. We asked for one or two extensions from the court
to give her time.
To give her more time to get through her issues. We very much believed and saw evidence of her. She loved her child.
Yeah.
But her growing up I think was so...
Well, it was a case of a generation.
Yes.
A generational neglect.
Yes.
That started with grandma, that started and continued with child, her daughter, and it was, it needed to be severed. That okay. was not yeah. the healthiest. It was not an adequate environment to raise a child.
Yeah. 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 It did not meet yes. minimal standards,
really
for
didn't.
Sure, on any yes. level. And that child is thriving.
Thriving. Mm-hmm.
And we do get sweet updates
yes.
from her adoptive mommy.
Okay. Yes.
And, yeah, that's just
it's
provided, yeah, provided a great deal of joy to us to see it all.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That, thank you, Linda. That was great. Another case that we had that just showed multifaceted issues mm-hmm. that went on. These were neglected nutritional issues, extreme dental needs with two children that resulted in all of their teeth being pulled at a young age
oh, wow.
because of malnutrition and improper care. Such extensive physical, mental, and emotional neglect that the children were at least 4 years behind. And this was when they were 6 and 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
That they were showing all aspects of their development, they were behind. So sadly, in this case, some small strides were being made in the school setting
mm-hmm.
and addressing multiple health deficits, but the placement eventually went back to a family member
okay.
who did not meet, in our opinion, minimal standards,
okay.
But was was most likely not to follow through on many of the necessary health-related issues for the future betterment of these children. And we felt, ultimately, that we had failed the children.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very disappointed in the placement and the outcome of that case.
Okay.
I do want to add as a caveat, when the case was legally turned over to the legal guardian, who was a family member,
mm-hmm.
the magistrate gave a stern warning
okay.
to the legal guardian at the end of the proceedings. And for that, both Linda and I were extremely grateful. We felt heard
okay.
in the justice system, and that was probably the best part of the case
okay.
is that we felt heard. So we don't always get the outcomes that we feel in our heart is in the best interest for the child,
mm-hmm.
but again, we're working in a complicated system.
Yes.
And we have to respect the system.
The Ohio CAS evaluation is the first study of its kind in our state, looking closely at how CASA volunteers impact the lives of children. The data give us some important insights about health and well-being. Let's walk through some of those findings and get your perspective. So the evaluation found that children with CASA volunteers were more likely to have their medical, dental, and mental health needs identify and address compared to children without a CASA. Why do you think having a CASA volunteer helps make sure those needs don't get overlooked?
As we've been told by each caseworker we've worked with, they carry a very heavy load.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot possibly address everything. And we are taught in training that we should work as a team with our caseworker for the betterment of the child. And we only have the focus of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do track parent services to make sure they're on target and all of that, but our focus is on the child. So we just had a, for instance, this week where Amy had delivered our JEs to the doctors and stood there patiently while they copied off all of the medical records. And we had reviewed those. And when we were at the first 90-day meeting, we were able to provide not only the pediatrician's name, address, we were also able to say that we've already pulled the records and have gone through them and were asked if they could have a copy of those. And because we work as a team and they have legal rights to these records, mm-hmm. we said, yes, you may make a copy of these. So we feel like if we work together like that,
yeah. right,
that each child will have a good team behind them.
Yes. Yes.
And I think CASA is the a little bit of the magic sauce there.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I love that.
We do have a lower workload,
yes.
and we have one singular focus.
Yes.
So I can believe the research nets out that a child with a CASA will be more successful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfectly said. Yes. Linda, many eyes, but I will reiterate, caseworkers have a heavy load.
Mm-hmm.
For the one family that we have, caseworkers carry 15 families,
mm-hmm.
at least.
Yeah.
And they also are not solely responsible for the child. They are also responsible for all of the chess pieces
mm-hmm.
of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what we have found, interestingly, that different caseworkers respond differently in different cases.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had extremely cooperative caseworkers that will share information.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, we've had caseworkers that have chosen not to share information and consider mm-hmm. us a little bit in competition with them for mm-hmm. some reason. Don't know why. The obvious objective is to help the child, so you'd think sharing information would be there. But we have also learned that obtaining information strictly from the parents and not getting detailed information from medical reports is not a full picture
mm-hmm.
at all
mm-hmm.
of what's going on with the child. So we tend to be diggers. We'll go in there and dig around and root around and find out, again, just the facts.
Yes.
And figure out what's going on.
The study also showed that CASA volunteers often play a key role in connecting children with health services more quickly, which means less waiting for appointments or treatments. From your experience, how important is timeliness in meeting a child's health needs?
Mm. Well, from our experience, it just pays to hand deliver the JE.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you can be successful by emailing it, but showing up with your CASA name badge and your court-appointed journal entry speeds things up.
Absolutely.
It might take, 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of your day, but it saves that child sometimes several months.
Yes.
In getting that information, whether it be good or bad, hopefully it's good and for good, positive information about the care of the child. But yeah, it's critical to the timeline.
Yeah,
agreed. Timeliness is critical.
Mm-hmm.
So much can be overlooked. And as an example, hearing and eye exams can change a child's educational
yes.
deficits.
Yes.
And if they're not explained and a child is just going further and further down, and it's because he needs to sit closer to the board or he cannot hear what's going on with the teacher, these are easy remedies
mm-hmm.
and should not be overlooked in the overall care of the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Why do you think mental health advocacy is so critical for children living in foster care?
We believe they enter foster care because there has been a severe deficit in their care. And those deficits not only cause physical health problems, they also cause mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And both will continue throughout their lifespan. And early intervention in a child's life, physical, educational, or mental, is imperative. And we do always advocate for some type of counseling.
Yes.
some type of therapy that helped them deal with the circumstances they're in and the trauma they've experienced.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with Linda. I think trauma affects everything.
Yeah.
And there's such a need for more individual counseling with young children. Difficult to understand children. We had one case where the kids were basically nonverbal. They were at an age where they were entering school, and they were not able to express themselves. So we were told that it was inappropriate for them to have counseling. There has to be better techniques to use on a child. The intervention at that early age has been known to be critical. And as Linda said, there are different techniques that can be used, such as play therapy, art therapy, drawing what you're feeling, etc. So there are holes in the way that the school approaches individual counseling, and I think that's something that needs to be addressed.
So CASA volunteers were also known to improve communication between systems, such as healthcare providers, schools, and the courts, which often don't share information well. How can better communication across these systems change a child's health journey? Linda?
Well, communication is key. And Amy and I are big proponents are on facts and objectivity. And we do not like playing the telephone game where he said, she said, they said. When someone starts a sentence with, well, she said, I want to see documentation. I don't want opinions. I want to see documentation. And when you provide documentation and ask for documentation, then you're all looking at the same report.
Yeah.
And we have felt that that has really helped set the standard for working with the courts, the caseworkers, and even CASA. We want to be able to back up what we say, and that's the basis of our technique to get through communication.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think, again, more consistency with primary source information is necessary. Don't rely on hearsay, gossip, reported or repeated family stories, just the facts. And we can all agree on that.
Overall, the evaluation confirmed that children with CASA volunteers had better outcomes when it came to stability and well-being. When you hear that research confirms what many advocates have long believed, how does that reinforce the importance of your role in a child's life?
Well, I do believe CASA is the critical ingredient. Because of our singular focus on the child. And we all kind of come with this commitment to do the best for that child, stepping on toes, saying what needs to be said. And we have one focus, that child. And I can believe that the research nets out that that child will do better with a CASA. And I hope that every county in the United States is as strong as our Lucas County CASA department, because they are, to me, the gold standard.
Thank you.
I absolutely agree with that, Linda. Eyes that are specifically focused on the child. Better focus equals better outcome.
Yeah.
I'm a CASA. My name is Pat Haney, and I've been involved in the organization for 8 years and have worked with at least 40 children. One that I am currently just getting involved in is a case whose family I worked with 4 years ago. The parents have had another child, that has been removed. So this is my second time with the same family. And it's been really alarming. I mean, I've been doing this for 8 years, so I thought I'd seen everything, but I'm astounded by the number of times that there's repetitive families that are coming back into children's services and needing support. I think it's the recognition that even though the outcomes aren't perfect in many cases, you like to see the fairy tale where the children wind up with the parents who have gotten their lives together. That's really rare, quite honestly, in what I've seen. So for me, it's the recognition that they are being given an opportunity with a family member in many cases, but in situations where the foster family is welcoming and really about doing the best they can for the children. I've been really lucky to have seen the best of many foster families, and I've got two right now, as a matter of fact. One has five children, one has a 18-month-old, and the children that are together, surprisingly, in one foster family are being adopted, and the 18-month is being adopted. So those two are really exciting for me because it's a really, really positive thing. I will say this, I just encourage anybody who has a little extra time on their hands and has the heart to share with a child to become a CASA.
Of course, navigating the healthcare system isn't easy for anyone, and it can be even harder for children living in foster care. CASA volunteers often step into the gap. What are some of the biggest barriers children living in foster care face in accessing healthcare, based on your experience?
Yeah. Well, children have a barrier accessing healthcare because they're not able to, period, end of story. Mm-hmm. They have to have the adult in the room access their healthcare, and if that adult is not an advocate for them, they don't know what they need, when they need it,
absolutely,
and why they need it. Mm-hmm. And that's where the parent, firstly, is the child's primary advocate. And if they are unable to, then it goes down the line. Family member, and if Lucas County has to get involved, then Lucas County becomes the eyes and the ears, and then, of course, CASA. So they are not in control of their own health care, and they don't even have the words to ask.
Exactly.
They're very vulnerable.
Precisely. Yes. Children are so powerless in this system and hopefully have many advocates at their disposal. And we are just one, but we are solely focused. Mm-hmm. And I think that is much to their benefit.
Yes. How do CASA volunteers advocate when they encounter resistance, whether from systems, agencies, or even the availability of providers?
The simple answer is go in person. Mm-hmm. I do really enjoy, though, writing emails and CCing all the powers to be and up the chain also, because that provides written documentation. But going in person and being courteous but persistent and telling them what your journal entry from the court enables you to access is usually pretty powerful.
Yes, absolutely. I think through determination, just being more, taking the next step, focus, remembering that the child is our top priority. Sometimes you just have to step back and say, nope, I think I'm going to make that third, fourth, fifth phone call because we need that information. So persistence with medical follow-through has been a really big tackling point for us. Mm-hmm. And I think after years of doing it and seeing how we can be successful has become a mainstay for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A challenge we were willing to take
yes.
on.
Yeah. Because ultimately it's not about us, it's about the child.
Yes.
Yeah. So the evaluation mentions that CASA volunteers help identify unmet health needs. What does that process look like in practice? Mm.
Well, the health needs of the child, to me, are directed by their healthcare team. Mm-hmm. And I look at that as the map, the guideline of what I need to advocate for. Mm-hmm. I'm not qualified to decide what they need, but they are. Yeah. And I have been very, very impressed with every hospital system and every pediatrician and or medical doctor's office with they have the focus correct, and mm-hmm. we just have to advocate.
Yeah. Perfectly said. Yeah. As Linda has said, face-to-face contact is always a better solution. We mm-hmm. have found that out. And it makes the provider feel empowered and yeah. supported. And they want to share this information. Mm-hmm. They don't always get asked it. They often are met with resistance from parents that are a little skeptical of what's going on in the doctor's office, what's being documented, etc. Mm-hmm. Maybe some fear involved, and I can understand that. But I think once we engage with healthcare professionals, we see that they do very much want to be supported and heard.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what skills or training are most important for CASA volunteers to effectively advocate in the healthcare area?
Well, healthcare and medical records are all based on diagnostics and testing. And of course, the doctor's opinion and guideline to benefit the child. And I think once you have the records and you become a team player with that medical facility or vision or dental, then you can effectively advocate for that child and their health care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And I felt like I wanted to add something, and I know it's not on the healthcare line, but it's an integral part of it with the education line, okay. navigating the school system, that often in the schools where there are larger classroom sizes than desirable, special educational needs get overlooked. Mm-hmm. And we have found this to be the case in one particular case that we had. The resources might be in the school, but mm-hmm. have not been identified mm-hmm. necessarily. So I think sometimes going a little bit further, same in the healthcare needs, when something's identified, just go a little deeper mm-hmm. and see what is available in terms of resources at that particular school and that particular doctor's office. Just taking that extra step, trusting your instinct, knowing that you might be able to dig a little bit further mm-hmm. to get to the core of it may very much benefit your child.
Yes, Linda. Thank you, Amy.
One question that we routinely ask professionals, whether educational or in healthcare, is how can we advocate for this child? Because they know what the child needs. They have a longer history with the child than we do.
Of course.
Yes.
And then they know right then we have a partner to help advocate for this child. They are so reassured by that. And then we are able to do our job.
Yeah. That's a great advice for current volunteers. And going back to what Amy said about the education system, we will be talking about that in the next episode.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, about IEPs and how, you know, CASA volunteers can be more effective in the educational system.
Excellent.
So let's move to the next question. How do CASA volunteers balance advocating for health needs while also respecting the roles of CASA workers, foster parents, and healthcare providers?
Mm-hmm. Well, we start every case believing that everyone has this child's best interest at heart until they prove us otherwise.
So well said.
Yes.
So well said. I think for me, and Linda also, bottom line, children are our main focus. Mm-hmm. And if we see neglect, we respectfully and persistently call it out. Mm-hmm. Our goal, our desire is to integrate all services available for the child. We continually learn about new services. Mm-hmm. If services are being underutilized, we will do our best to correct the situation, with the child's needs always coming first.
Amy and Linda, thank you for sharing your CASA journey so openly. Since beginning in 2021, your dedication and compassion have given children not only a voice in court, but also hope and encouragement. Your unique stories are an inspiration to me and to everyone listening. Today reminded us that CASA volunteers are more than courtroom advocates. They are champions for children's well-being. Ensuring health needs aren't overlooked, and every child has the chance to a healthier, more stable future. So the Ohio CASA evaluation confirms it. When a CASA is involved, children receive the care, attention, and advocacy they deserve. If you're inspired by Amy and Linda's story, now is the time to act. Visit CASAKids.net or call us at 419-213-6753 to learn how you can become a CASA volunteer. Every child deserves a voice. Maybe that voice could be yours. Thank you for listening to the Lucas County CASA podcast, The Power of One. Until next time, I'm your host, Andrea de la Roca.
The Lucas County CASA podcast highlights how the power of one person can transform the lives of abused children in our community. This podcast is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Lucas County CASA program, with generous support from an Ohio Attorney General's Office grant award. All episodes are posted on WGTE.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Learn more about the Lucas County CASA program at CASAKids.net.